Down toward the southern end of New Jersey, on a slim barrier island, lies a smidgen of shoreline called Margate City. These days, Margate's a booming vacation town, just a few miles from Atlantic City and embellished with a new Starbucks, porta-potties, and jumbo lump crab cakes to go. But Jeanette Hardy, a naturalist who grew up there, remembers when Margate was a simpler place, dominated by a hard-edged clam digger culture, and a salty accent found nowhere but South Jersey.
Margate, my hometown, is famous for three things. There's the blissful seashore landscape with soft sandy beaches and velvety bayside marshlands. There's the 1920s neighborhood called Marvin Gardens that first blazed to glory on the Monopoly board and later in a great movie starring Jack Nicholson. That's the one where he plays a depressed all-night talk show jock. Then there's Lucy the Elephant. She's a six-story tall, metal-clad wonder built on the beach more than 100 years ago by a real estate speculator from Philadelphia. An honest-to-God national landmark, Lucy is quite a showstopper, with her huge head facing the Atlantic Ocean and her huge rump facing Atlantic Avenue. Her embellishments include a fussy Victorian howdah and eyes made of big round portholes. When I was 10 or so, I remember looking through those eyes and wondering whether I could row my little boat straight across to Spain.
You can still look through the round windows that form the eyes of the elephant, but the view is completely different. We used to be able to see the ocean and then parts of Atlantic City and a whole sweep of beach that went for miles. But now I look out and I see a round patch of ocean through her right eye. And through her left eye, I can see some apartments that block the ocean view from Lucy.
My father still lives in the house he and my mother built in the 1950s. I return often from my home in New Orleans to visit and nurture my sense of history. Once my whole family, an immense clan of Gottliebs and Herons, lived nearby, but now most of the tribe has either passed away or moved away to find opportunity and houses they can afford. So for me, it's a big treat to walk along the beach and find a friend from my childhood, now a vestige like the elephant and me.
Now watch your head.
His name is Christopher Cook Gilmore, and he grew up to be a writer and an accomplished adventurer. Chris would gladly have explored the seas with his ancestor, Captain Cook, if he'd been born 200 years ago.
I sail on this boat.
Lacking that option, he settled for winters in Morocco, springs in Paris, and summers in Margate.
I've never missed a summer on this beach in my entire life. Wherever I am in the world, I start thinking about how lovely it is with those waves rolling in. And all of a sudden, I'm on a plane, and I'm out of there, and I'm back here, and not going anywhere for a long time.
Eel thin and craggy as Willem Dafoe, Chris's South Jersey accent is perfectly intact.
The first thing I do in the morning is I walk down the bulkhead and I take a good look at the surf. I don't surf a surfboard anymore. What I really like to surf is a Hobie Cat. And I ride them the way a surfboard rides them. I don't ride straight into the beach. I ride them up on one pontoon. I can get this whole beach on its feet on a good day.
Chris has been courting the good days on Margate's beach for 50 years or so. But when the surf's disappointing, he's apt to drive 5 minutes to his boat on the bay, where he first cultivated his mariner's zest in the exotic domain of shorebirds, bayfish, and marshy islands.
After I'd been all through sailing, and I was 12 years old, I talked my grandfather into getting me a boat and motor, ostensibly so that he and I could go fishing together. But he was well beyond his fishing years by then and into his drinking years, which I knew at the time, but I always played it up to him about how we were going to get in this boat and go catch flounder, and he was going to show me this.
Chris's grandfather, Parker Cook, bought him a little wooden clamming boat called a Garvey, along with a 3-horsepower motor, and pointed him toward a life of exploration.
And that Garvey, he told me, was the best boat you could have for the bay, because for one thing it was cheap, and for another, it floated on practically no water. They say a Garvey can float on dew.
Chris is forever fixed in my mind like this. He's dressed in a gold-braided captain's hat, khaki shorts, and a blue-and-white striped T-shirt. Poised by his flat-bottomed Garvey, he's a living tribute to his old salt of a grandfather.
And that square bow is very good for taking the chop and wonderful for stepping off onto marsh banks and sandbars. And with my 3 horsepower and credit at the gas dock, he set me loose when I was 12 years old, and nobody had ever done anything as wonderful for me in my life.
The 16-foot Garvey Chris owns now is called Moët, after the French word for a gull and a fine champagne. She's outfitted with an old ship's wheel, a tiny cabin, and a 30-horsepower Evinrude. Moët's traveled as far south as the Great Dismal Swamp in North Carolina and as far north as New York, where he circumnavigated Manhattan. But this afternoon, we just poke around the marshes of Margate.
That's the gas dock where my grandfather gave me $25 credit, and it lasted all summer.
Out on the water, we're surrounded by a strange juxtaposition of landscapes. On the port side stands a long string of fancy houses. Off our bows, the Longport Bridge. And past our stern, there's the gap-toothed skyline of Atlantic City's high-rise casinos.
The Borgata is the biggest building in New Jersey, and the Taj Mahal is the tallest, 54 stories.
Off the starboard, softening the man-made mix, lies the huge sweep of marshland that helped shape the character and the aesthetic of many a Margate kid.
This is the most delicious smell on God's earth.
Isn't
right
it lovely?
You can taste the salt.
Yep.
From a distance, the marshes look like an endless wilderness of ornamental grasses, swaying in the wind, changing color from green to brown with the season. One of the defining plants is Spartina grass.
Spartina is named after Sparta because it's so tough. No life can live on salt water. It has to filter out the salt. And you'll see on the top of each blade of Spartina a little drop of salt. It has to push out of its water every day, just to drink.
Crisscrossing the terrain is a patchwork of creeks and estuaries with birds and their fledglings positioned all along the edges. There are ducks, gulls, oyster catchers, terns, herons, willets, and osprey.
Now, see that, those three sticks? That's all that's left of our osprey tower that we built about 10 or 12 years ago.
They're such wonderful birds to watch, aren't they?
Oh, they're great. They're so pretty. Like when they'll catch a fish in the ocean, and they fly it back here because they live here, they point the fish into the wind.
For aerodynamics?
Yeah. Now we're coming up on Risley's Channel. And this is Hermit's Island on your right. At Seagull City.
Can we get up closer to it?
Oh, yeah. See him in there?
It's just so remarkable looking at these nesting gulls. Then there's a layer of marsh, and then there's a layer of houses along the bay, and then there's a layer of high-rise casinos in Atlantic City, and then there's nothing.
Yeah.
Sky.
I guess it's no mystery that I landed in Louisiana, where I navigate easily between New Orleans and the nearby swamps. Still, when I'm in Margate, I can't quite get over the view of Atlantic City from a little Garvey puttering through the marsh.
If you take a boat down the coast from New York City to Florida, the biggest city you'll see on the whole way is Atlantic City. You won't see anything that comes anywhere near it. Herb Nixon lives here.
This house?
Yep.
Well, that used to be Judy Feinberg's house.
Right.
Remember her?
Nope.
And that was Carl Rosenblum's house. Remember Carol?
Yep. I remember when Pearl Mesta rented that house for the 64 convention.
The marshes remain the same as ever, but other big chunks of my Margate memories have gone missing. A couple of years ago, my friend Tony's home was sold, torn down, and replaced by a showplace with big bubble windows that ogle the ocean. I'm glad to report, though, that Mrs. Lippincott's English garden is still in full bloom to remind me why I took up my life of planting and pruning. And Aunt Mary's shady front porch is still there to remind me why I built one of my own. Nevertheless, somewhere along the way, I've come to appreciate something Burt Lancaster said in his last great movie 20 years ago. The Atlantic Ocean was something then, Lancaster said, as he walked along the boardwalk. Yeah, you should have seen the Atlantic Ocean in those days. For National Public Radio, I'm Jeanette Hardy.
Our story was recorded by Ivan Burketh and produced by Sarah Beyer, Clambake Kelly, who also directs our program. Production team includes Charlie Merritt, McNulty, Bridget McCarthy, Janaea Williams, Darcy Bacon, Evie Stone, and Lauren Spohr. Editor this week, Marcus Rosenbaum. Our technical director is Burke Hunt, so ably assisted by Ted Mebane, Marty Curcius, Wonderboy Chris Nelson, and Peter Elena. We say goodbye, good luck, and thank you to our librarian, one of our librarians, Holly Witt, who is returning back home to Sweet Alabama. But Holly, before you go, we need a list of every left-handed French-speaking foreign minister of a UN member state who's taller than 5'6" and is wearing brown shoes. Yeah, and alphabetize it, please. Our senior editor is Gwendolyn Tompkins, and the senior producer of Weekend Edition Saturday is Peter Breslow. I'm Scott Simon.